From Calvary Church of Santa Ana, this is the Calvary Life Podcast, the show where we share stories, tell jokes, and have discussions about faith, life, and God with people from Calvary Church. Here are your hosts, Eric and Matt.
All right. Hey, everybody. This is Eric Wakeling and Matt Davis with the Calvary Life Podcast. And we have special guest today, Tim Selleck. Tim Selleck is the founding pastor and the lead pastor for 30 years of the Crossing Church in Costa Mesa, but he was a pastor here at Calvary Church. And so we want to talk to him today about all of that. So welcome, Tim. How are you doing today?
It's awesome. It's awesome. It's a great day. Who would not want to live in Southern California?
That's right. It's a beautiful, beautiful day in the winter. So we're excited. Hey, Tim, would you just even first like share with us a little bit about like a little bit of your Calvary origin story? So maybe, you know, what got you to Calvary, and then what was your time like here?
Okay, so back in the day, I was on staff with Athletes in Action, a wrestling team, competing wrestling team. Moved out here in the fall of 82. And what back then, the way Campus Crusade for Christ, now called Crew, did it is you could only have so many camp, you know, like crusade staff at a church. And so for different reasons, I think most around the area of support raising and
mix it up.
But basically what happened was is somebody said, hey, Calvary Santa Ana has an opening.
Nice.
So we decided to attend. That was the first church we attended when we came out here. And that weekend, we sat through the service during the welcome time. That was when they put a little sticker rose on you when you were a first-time visitor, made you stand up, introduce yourself.
Ooh, should we bring that back?
Yeah, or what was it? No. And the people sitting right behind us were Roger and Pat Harvey.
Oh, yeah.
And Pat Harvey, and sweet people. And so, like, right after the service got done, the church service got done, they asked us out for dinner or for lunch or whatever it was. Like, who does that anymore, right?
Right.
And so here's this young couple, 23, 22 years old, and we're in California, no kids, just the two of us, and we went out to lunch with them. We were really excited about the pastor, but we found out that that was the last weekend for that pastor. He was interim pastor, Lehman Strauss.
Oh, wow,
So all these names I'm mentioning, nobody's going to know.
I have a vinyl of him preaching his last sermon.
No way.
Yes.
Seriously?
I seriously do.
Okay, good. Good sermon, by the way. So that nice. I heard that sermon.
Okay.
That was, I was maybe, or his last one before he died or something.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, so... So anyway, that was his last sermon, and then the next week there was going to be a new pastor here at Calvary Church Santa Ana, and so we just planted roots right off the bat, and that's how we got here. I mean, it's not like any kind of mystical, you know, we prayed about or anything. It was like, okay, Crusade, you got an opening there, we're going to attend there. And for us, it wasn't so much about like the music, the mess. It was like, okay, we want to put roots down in a church.
Mm-hmm.
And so we were here. And
so then how long do you work for Athletes in Action, or were you involved with that before you came on staff with Calvary?
No. So we were on for 2 years. So basically got out here in the fall, started wrestling season, hurt my knee somewhere in the new year of 83.
Okay.
And like total reconstruction and everything, put me on the sidelines. And that was kind of the catalyst that allowed me to even begin thinking about pastoral ministry. Because I wasn't even thinking about that. I was thinking, okay, when I was doing with Athletes in Action, I'd be a teacher, a coach, mm-hmm. somewhere, go back to the Midwest, wasn't going to stay in California. So, but God had other plans.
Yeah.
Then how did that come about then? What was the transition? So that's the catalyst. You had the injury. What's the catalyst that pushed you towards ministry?
So there's a guy in the office at Athletes in Action who was that year at the end of 83, or the summer of 83, was going to leave staff, and he was going to go to seminary, okay? And so when he said seminary, I'd never heard of seminary, because the tradition I came out of before I came to Christ was a Catholic tradition, and so seminary meant something completely different,
right.
Okay? You go be a priest. Well, so when he said seminary, I thought that was kind of interesting. So he said he's going to go to seminary. And, well, but what they did with all the hurt athletes back then, with Athletes in Action, they made you the speaker. So when a phone call came in and it wasn't already prearranged for somebody to go to this school or this college or that, so they took the hurt athletes and sent you out. Well, unbeknownst to me, a couple different people heard me give back then the evangelistic presentation and I sort of added, not added to it like theologically, but added to it with some story and some color and stuff like that. And out of that, somebody said, well, you should think about being like a pastor or a preacher kind of guy. So when this guy at AIA said he's going to seminary, then I said, okay, tell me about it. And then that put me on a trajectory where I started attending Talbot Theological Seminary.
Okay.
Wow. And then I put together an internship program and handed it to the senior pastor at the time, which was David Hocking, and said, I'd like to, you don't have to pay me. I'm not asking for a paid staff position. I want to learn what ministry is all about. I'd like to hang out, watch, observe, see what's going on. So here's an internship program. This is the way I see it playing out for the next 3 years. You can put me here, put me here, put me here. And I just handed all this like 24 sheet pay, internship program.
Yeah.
And then he said, well, we'll let the Lord guide in these matters. And then the Lord did guide actually out of it and ended up as a, sort of like a paid internship out of it.
Oh, that's
great. Way back in the day.
I love that. I think that's actually a good lesson to even young people today, right? Like, hey, like make this happen, like seek the Lord, but also take the initiative to go for it. And I feel like a lot of business, even leaders I hear, are people that have done that in the past.
Yeah. For me, it's all about just like, I didn't know what it meant to be a pastor. I'd watch people here at Calvary Church Santa Ana, which was really my like true formative Christian experience was here at Calvary Church Santa Ana. And so I just took the risk to say, I want to do this. Mm-hmm. I'm not asking for pay. Mm-hmm. I want the experience, or at least want to see what could be.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that anybody, and nowadays actually in college, they talk more about there's so many more unpaid internships. Nobody gets real jobs anymore right out of college. You just keep doing these internship things.
Right.
But for me back then, it was a great, great experience to
right.
be here.
Got your foot in the door too,
yep.
right?
Yeah, yep, sure did.
So then you became the singles pastor here, right? Is
yep.
that was that your main job that you had here?
Yeah, so what happened out of it, Sam Talbert, great guy, he actually said, well, why don't we got an opening as a teacher, and I think the teacher was in the careers class is what it was called.
Okay.
And said, you want to try that out? And let me just tell you, I don't know if you can use this word, barfed all over the class, but basically, here I am teaching, never done it before. I think I just cringe at how bad that was. But Sam gave me a chance. I think the class back then, the career class was like 100 people. It dwindled down to probably 20. I mean, I don't know. But it was a great experience. And then out of that, they asked me to oversee the whole singles ministry.
Okay. That's awesome.
And at that time, I think there was the careers class, and then I started something called 20 Plus, which was kind of a gap between college and the career class. And then there was Sunshiners, which was primarily people who went through a divorce, the trauma of a divorce.
Okay.
And then I was over a couple other singles.
Okay, nice. Ministry names are some of my favorite things, right? Like
yep.
Sunshiners, 20 Plus.
Yeah,
More than conquerors.
More than conquerors.
it's also the same words we use to like sign our signature at the end of an email.
Right.
In his grip.
Just signed Tim. There you go.
Yeah, exactly. There you go.
What were like surprises along the way, or like I wish they taught this at Talbot? Any of those moments for you, or just?
Well, for me, it was really hard because like I was living in right on the border of Fountain Valley in Santa Ana. So we're driving over here to do this at that time, I started out as a part-time singles pastor and then I'm driving up to Talbot just whenever I had a class. And I tried to string a couple of them together on different days, Monday, Wednesday, Friday, or Tuesday, Thursday classes. But then I would drive right back here, to Calvary Santa Ana to pour my life into the ministry that I was overseeing. And I saw a real disconnect between what I was being taught, particularly in the practical ministry side of things, and then what I was experiencing in ministry.
Mm-hmm.
But actually, from my perspective, it was the best of all worlds because I was getting this biblical education that was really new for me.
Mm-hmm.
And now I'm getting this practical kind of laboratory where I could thankfully back then make mistakes.
Mm-hmm.
They weren't too cringeworthy, from that standpoint and try things. Back then, I thank God because I got to try all kinds of things. I was on staff for the 4 or 5 years when I was here. So it was a great opportunity for me.
Yeah, that's huge. I think that was huge for me too. Like where in, I remember in seminary being able to learn these things and you kind of wonder, is this real? But you can try it. And then it's like, oh no, this doesn't actually work in my environment. Maybe it did in another environment. I don't know. I remember having a professor that had only served in Maine. And then he came and was teaching in Southern California. And so it just wasn't maybe the best connect. But at the same time, it was so great to be able to test those things out and learn from them. So that's cool. That's cool. So what led you then to start a new church in the area?
Well, that's another God thing, because there was a point, I think it was around year 4 or 5. So I graduated from Talbot. Now I'm on full-time staff here at Calvary Santa Ana. And for a period of time there, I just went up to, you know, who was my boss at the time, Dr. Hawking, and just said, I think I'd like to be a senior pastor. And so what do I need to do? He said, well, I'll put your name out there a little bit. And he actually did. And so I, you know, some things came my way. But what was neat about it is I think God shut those doors or even put the pause button on some of the processes I was in. And then unbeknownst to me, just we were in a staff meeting one day. It was in March of 88. And we're in a staff meeting and Dr. Hawking said, hey, there's this church come to us in Costa Mesa and we're going to plant a church there.
Oh, okay.
And so
did he assign it to you right then in that meeting?
No. Okay. I actually got up out of the staff meeting when the staff meeting was over. I don't know where the room, I know it used to be, I don't know if it still is that. It was the bride's room for a while, but that's where we had staff meetings.
Okay.
And I don't even know if that even exists anymore.
Right in, like at the entrance to Sam's Lake Chapel?
Yep. The right.
Yeah, if you're looking at the term. Still there. Room.
Okay, so that was I got all these memories here that are really in my mind. I mean, like I can remember when this happened at this location, at this place.
Yeah,
they're fond memories for me.
Yeah.
I'll tell you about one with Lauren Grisette later if you want, but anyway.
Sure.
So I got up after the staff meeting and said, I want to do that. And so this phrase I got used to hearing, well, he said, well, we'll let the Lord guide in these matters. So heard that phrase again.
Yeah.
And out of that experience came the opportunity to be the one. You know, I don't think there was anybody else volunteering, so I don't think there was much competition. And long and short of it was, is they let me do it. Hmm. And that was, so I think they made the first announcement, if my memory serves me right, like the last weekend of July 88,
okay,
the first weekend of August 88, that we're going to plant this church. Now, in the May business meeting, I don't know if you guys still have a business meeting in May, but they had this, okay, all church business meeting in the middle of May. That's when they told the church they were going to do it and they voted on it. Well, then they didn't tell the church again anything about it until the end of July, August. But we were starting the church in September 11th, 1988. Okay. That's not how you plant the church.
Right. It's
way different now.
Yes. Well, and so in between all that, there was all these things that God also used to help shape me. And just because of my aggressive kind of risk-oriented personality, went and got information.
Mm-hmm.
And so we launched out. But then we had a core group meeting here the second weekend of August. What used to be Fellowship Hall, I don't know if it is anymore, but back
still is.
Okay, there. So had a core group meeting there, first one. Second one, the next weekend after that, the group, there was 60-some people there the first week. The next week, there was another 60, but half of them were different than the week before.
Okay.
And so now we're counting down for, like, we're 3 weeks away from launch date. And I am amazed that church has survived all 30 years. I mean, because
it's not just survived, it's thrived from what I've seen.
Yeah, but I mean, still, the way we started was just not. A couple weeks ago, I got out of this church planner's assessment. It was done through this organization called Stadia, great organization. Yeah. And so I'm one of the teams. There's 16 church planter couples there. I mean, what they have available to them these days.
Right.
I mean, the assessments, I had a packet just on every person that was like a large notebook.
Yeah,
of assessing.
I know.
They didn't do any of that. I kept asking myself the whole time I was in this, thing was like, would Sue and I have made it through this?
Right.
Well, we did.
Well, that's what I think about even you read these in missions classes in college. We had to read these amazing stories, these people that just go out and they reach these tribes that no one knows about. They just kind of went for it because God mm-hmm. called them to you. But now it's like, okay, well, you got to make sure you finish this degree and go through these 37 steps, beforehand. So yeah. Some of that is good that we're preparing people, but also kind of, I don't know if we're ever kind of quenching some of the fire that maybe a person like you just has to go for it.
It was a relying, seriously, and I'm not, this is not understanding. It was a relying on the power of God. I've always believed in a very big God. It was relying on a belief in a very big God from day one.
Yeah.
Because when you think about when the core group met 4 weeks from opening day, I didn't have anybody to do music. I didn't have anybody to do children's of any variety.
Right.
We started day one. Get this. There's not a church plant I know ever has done. We started day one with two services because all I knew was Calvary Church Santa Ana. And Calvary Church Santa Ana always had more than one service. So I thought all churches, because all I knew was this church, I thought all churches had more than one service. So we started this church plant day one with two services.
Wow. That's amazing, actually.
Actually, that's stupid. Yeah. But when you look at it, the hardest decision to make is to go from one to two services. So we already made the hardest decision that most churches have to make.
Right out the gate.
Right out the gate when we started with two.
Wow.
So, I mean, there's all those kind of things that when I look back, you know, it is a God thing.
Yeah.
What's going on for you internally? Just the call to be a senior pastor. Are you listening to other messages thinking like, I have something to say, I want to do it? Or even just how a church is run? Or is it a passion burden for Costa Mesa? Like, how does that come
up
for
you? Just supernatural or, you know what I mean? What is it?
Well, if you're going to go back 30 years ago,
I
don't know if I even understood what I know now back then. There was just this desire where I really had a deep desire to reach people who were like me. And I did grow up in a church setting. We wouldn't generally call it, you know, in Protestant settings, a Christian background. I was Catholic. But when I came to faith in Christ the summer before my senior year in high school, I had this deep burden that I wanted to reach other, particularly guys, athletic guys, with the good news of Jesus Christ. And so... I tried that a lot here at Calvary Santa Ana with a lot of singles things I did. And I would even invite people in the community to come to church. And then when we launched out this new church, that was the prime emphasis of the church, is that literally our whole goal was to reach people who we say at the Crossing who are saying no to God. We want to help them say yes to Him through His Son, Jesus Christ. Hmm. So our raw material from day one, what I felt called to reach, was people who were non-Christians and not attending a church.
Yeah.
And then if you fast forward, you know, the DVD menu, if you go 30 years now forward, 47% of the crossing are people, that's their only church experience.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
That they've never been in another church except the Crossing. So that's a big yay God, because I don't
amazing.
Know too many churches that can say that.
Exactly.
It comes with a lot of mess, but at the same time.
Yeah.
So for me, I guess the call back then wasn't so much to be like a senior pastor or a lead pastor as much as it was, I want to reach people.
Yeah,
and I want to reach people in our community, and then that kept as like a little snowball got into this big boulder of snow as it kept rolling literally downhill for Jesus, and that's what we did.
That's cool. How different do you feel today? Like you are, I mean, you seem like a driver. You seem like energy. I mean, you seem like that right now here today. Mm-hmm. And I mean, we haven't talked about yet, like kind of what's next for you and all that, but like, do you feel like you still have that same kind of like vigor and passion? Cause it appears that way to me.
I think I very much do. I mean, even just being with the church planter assessment group, you know, a couple of weeks ago and seeing these young couples, many of them from like where I was age-wise, 22 up to, you know, some were in like 35, 40.
Yeah.
Being able to get around them, trying to encourage them, trying to coach them. Not so much, again, to reach church people, because they're going to go into these communities and that probably do need a church, but I want them to reach people who aren't going anywhere to church and have no belief in Jesus. So that, beats so strong in me. And then I would say that this thing that is me has always been fairly aggressive. There's a test out there, a personality profile. They call it the DISC profile.
Yeah,
high D.
Yeah.
That's all I got is, I ain't got no I. Can I say ain't? I ain't got no S or C.
Yeah.
Just high D.
Yeah.
And so that's caused problems.
Uh-huh.
Bowl loose in a china shop kind of problems.
Right.
But it's also, I really believe it's something that God's used.
Yeah.
To go out and do things for him.
So tell me with that then, like if we're thinking about just like people, I mean, maybe we've been telling your story and I don't want to get too sort of in like a bunch of pastors talking about being pastors. And so I think about people at Calvary that are, maybe they're entrepreneurs, maybe they're starting a nonprofit, maybe it's a new business they've got going. It could be somebody in a church ministry too, but just what do you think, like, what are some of those lessons that you learned in having that high D, you know, like strong leader personality, but you went to start something? How'd that help you? Maybe how'd that hurt you?
Well, the high D part for me has always been monitored by my athletic background. Like, I like being coached. Mm-hmm. I like learning. So I see an entrepreneur, it's not a foolish risk taker. Mm-hmm. I see an entrepreneur as an educated risk taker. So you do your due diligence up front. So like even when we started the Crossing way back 30 years ago, well, there was nobody at Calvary Santa Ana, not because there was just no one here at the time that could give me input on, okay, planting a church.
Right.
So I asked people in here that were on staff at the time, do you know anybody who's planted a church? I got a couple names from people that were like in Long Beach and Modesto, and I went and visited those people, got on the old, you know, rotary dial phone and called them up, you know?
Yeah.
And then there's a guy, I'm not a best friend with him at all, but somebody told me about Rick Warren had a pastor's day that he would hold every month in his office. So I went and attended that. And I went with a legal pad with all kinds of questions on it and just asked questions because I was desperate because we hadn't launched yet. So my whole focus is, if I was saying something to somebody that's going to say you're going to start a business, profit or nonprofit, it's like, go do your due diligence and do your research. Mm-hmm. And don't think you're above being taught by somebody who's gone before you. Because for me, it's always been about putting people in my life that are like maybe 3 steps to 5 steps ahead, who have attained, whether it's in the church world or in the business world, a measure of success, who I could learn from or I could be schooled. Mm-hmm. You know, they could literally give me input and information. And I found that if you buy somebody lunch and send them $100, you know, check when you're all done, they don't expect it, you know, just to say thank you. People will want to tell you about their story.
Yeah.
and what they've learned.
Yeah.
So I try to do that with church. It's like, okay, you got to go out and get your information. But then there's always that period of time. Once you get the information, you just got to take the step.
Yeah,
take the leap and then go do it, or like make the decision.
Right.
And I'm not the kind that goes, I'm aiming. For me, it's like, okay, let's fire. And as we keep firing, we'll get closer to hopefully the bullseye of the target.
Yeah. I can relate to that within church, decisions within the church, you know, and decisions that we make, like, hey, we want to be more risk taking and all that. But the decision to step out with your family and to say, hey, we're starting this new thing and I don't know what's going to happen. I mean, I think that's another level of firing, right?
Yep.
And so I don't know. I always commend, I feel like, any church planner or entrepreneur because of that sort of risk-taking mentality. So I guess I'm like thankful as a pastor here in Orange County for someone that started, that took the risk. And now there's this like amazing place, the Crossing, that we've seen, and from afar at some level, I mean, I've known you over the years a little bit, but man, just seeing this incredible fruit, you know, from afar of what's happened with the church that you started. So,
yeah, well, thank you. And,
yeah, man.
And it is pretty amazing when you think about how it all started. And you know, you when you do start something, I left the security of Calvary Santa Ana.
Right.
I took a pay cut, a pretty big pay cut. Not that I was making big bucks back then,
right.
But I took a pay cut to start this thing.
Mm-hmm.
And but you do. And I mean, the good news was, is we still had friends in Orange County. We still had people who were part of Calvary Santa Ana that were great encouragers for us in that period of time.
When you're saying the bull in the china shop, it's a good picture. Yep. Do you just go through and you bust through the, like, how do you learn out of those lessons? Or do you just kind of, well, we'll just have to clean it up later? Or how did God maybe bring people in? Was your wife part of that process of like, okay, you're in a china shop, you got to tame yourself a little bit? Were some of those lessons painful, or what did that look like?
The lessons were extremely painful. I mean, like 3 weeks into the new church start, a good example is the church that decided back then to give us the property and want this new church to start. They held a business meeting and said, we want to ask you to leave. We don't want you here anymore. So because what we were doing to reach, you know, people who were far from God and had no church background, everything that we were doing back then was seen as fairly heretical. I mean, nowadays it's sort of normalized, but it was
unorthodox.
Unorthodox from a church standpoint. And so they asked us to leave 3 weeks in.
Oh, man.
But again, I asked some people from Calvary Santa Ana to come down, and they came down. Now, that didn't change things because they took another vote. And the next vote was more decided to kick us out, but it was an illegal vote. So at least I knew their constitution and bylaws enough to go, some of you voted that are illegal voting members, and when you take an illegal vote according to constitution and bylaws, you have to wait 8 weeks before you do another vote. So, I mean, you know,
and that bought you some time.
Bought me some time. Yeah.
So that's the bull charging,
that's
right?
Bull charging, and then you got to take a step back. And so, but the nice thing in that was. During that whole season of time, is they're now seeing. I mean, here's a good example. So, like, everything that they're seeing on a weekend service is completely abnormal to them, and yet at the same time, they're also seeing young families and babies in a nursery that didn't have babies in a nursery for 20 years. So you know, there's and you, I think what the bowl does is the bowl lifts up these other things where God is at work, that maybe are more palatable, so that people can see. So that when their experience of what they're starting to go toward is not normative, or you know, a little bit scary, you show them some of the fruit of that, and it makes things a little bit more tasty. Mm-hmm. But you know, look, you think about it. I mean, like Caleb and Joshua, they go in the Promised Land. They're saying we can do this. Our God is big, and everybody else is saying no. We're like little, you know.
We're gonna get creamed.
Know?
Yeah.
So
exactly.
I think it's always been that way for men and women of God who want to step out in faith. If we really see through a heavenly perspective, and we think from a big God perspective, we're always going to be seen as a little bit off.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't mean that in a way that is weird. I just mean that, you know, you're going to take some risks, whether it could be anything. It could be a big capital campaign you're going to do in a church. It could be a new, we started a thing at the Crossing. Like where we went because we didn't have the space anymore, we started doing these staggered services on a Sunday where we did five services every half hour. On the half hour, you could come to the Crossing and attend a church service.
Wow.
So it was like
cool.
A movie theater mentality to church.
Yeah.
And it was great. And we had to figure it out with children's ministry and how we were going to do that because we didn't even have this, you know. So, but you take a risk.
Yep.
And see what happens. But there's more things that we tried that didn't work than that did work.
I'm sure, but. That's great. That's great. And I think that's what we're trying to even cultivate more of a heart of evangelism and seeking out to those who are, you know, aren't saved. We don't want to grow our church through just people leaving their church and coming over here. We want to see people who are unchurched come to know the Lord and become part of our family. And so I know that while still being committed fully to the truth of God's word and preaching that faithfully, but yeah, I know that some of those changes are hard for a lot of people, you know, and some of that risk taking, you can feel a little bit like you'd rather be an Israelite that just says, I'll wander for another 40 years rather than get into that Promised Land.
And I would just encourage you guys here at Calvary Santa Ana, because this church has always had a rich history in reaching out, particularly across borders and across the oceans with the good news of Jesus Christ. But what's so amazing these days is God puts us in neighborhoods where the people next door or across the street are people who have no relationship with Jesus.
Mm-hmm.
And so, I mean, it's still important to write a check or send some money to somebody who's going to go across the border or across the ocean.
Mm-hmm.
But what we need to do is we need to go outside our door and develop relationships with those next door, not so much with the idea we're going to invite them to church, but just that we're going to care for them and we're going to love on them and we're going to show Jesus to them. And then, you know, at some point, you want to invite them either to come meet Jesus.
Right.
But I think this church is such a history of reaching out. It's sad to me if our congregation, and I say our because this is part of my history as well.
Absolutely.
Our congregation and our congregants need to reach out.
Yes.
Next door.
Yeah, absolutely.
So we are missionaries.
That's right.
And so shame on us in some ways, if we're not doing that. Because, you know, the whole idea of a Christian is that we're wanting to be little Christ, like Christ, right? And his mission was to seek and save the lost.
Yeah.
He told us when he left, go make disciples.
Yep.
Not hide in your house. Don't, you know, run away from the darkness. No, shine into the darkness.
Yeah, amen.
And so, man, I'd love Calvary Santa Ana and its congregants, the Crossing and its congregants to be those kinds of people.
So now you are 30 years later.
Yep.
You can look back over those 30 years and there's some measure of success, but you've also just transitioned out. Can you just talk through what is that process? What led you to saying, I'm done. I'm moving forward. We're bringing somebody else in. What surrounded all that for you?
Well, what happened was is I had this great opportunity to be a part of some pastors that Kenton Bishore convened. Most of them were a part of his Mariners network, and then there was about two or three of us that were outside of that. And again, just because I'm a learner, I wanted to be coached. It was a great opportunity for me to sit at his feet, if you will. And one day in the meeting, he mentioned this thing called succession that he was like toying with or mulling over. And I'd heard the word from a business standpoint, but never heard it in a church standpoint. So got together with him for lunch, just asked him to explain a little bit more to me. What does that mean? What does that look like? You know, what kind of things could I read? Who could I talk to?
How long ago is this?
This was about 7 years ago.
Okay.
And so so if you rewind all of that, there hadn't been only but one book published in the Christian world, which is a book called Transitions or Transition by a guy named Russell, who led one of the largest churches in the United States, Southeast Christian Church. And I think it's in Louisville or Lexington, Kentucky. Mm-hmm. One of those, it's a huge church. Bob Russell is his name. And so I got that book and read it and then started talking to people. As we got closer, our board said, you know, we need to at least have an emergency succession plan. So we put that together in case I got hit by a bus. Mm-hmm. We didn't have that. Most churches don't even have that. And then what happened was is they, Kenton gave us a name of somebody who had helped some nonprofit, significant nonprofit, Christian nonprofits with succession here in Orange County. And our board went and met with that individual. And the individual said, you're probably a little too soon, too early. But it's great you're talking about it. And so then about 4 years ago, we started a countdown where I said, you know, we really need to entertain this. My wife and I and our board went to a succession planning workshop that was put on by an organization called Leadership Network. Mm-hmm. And out of that, we actually moved up our timeline because we felt like God was saying, you know, on the 30th anniversary of the Crossing, we would hand over the keys, if you will, to a new person. And so we made that decision in November of 2015. In January of 2016, we decided to go outside our staff for that new person. And so in January of 2016, we secured the help of a search agency. They brought us a bunch of candidates in May of 16. And out of that, got just a gem of a guy, of a couple, and Andrew and Melissa Brownback. Mm-hmm. And he came on staff in September of 2016 with the whole idea that he would be the guy.
Right.
We didn't tell the church at the time. The only people that knew were the board, myself and my wife. And then we started rolling out the communication of that in of September of 2017. And then January of 2018, we told the whole church.
Okay.
So it's been a very, you know, like, very well-planned process, kind of how I'm wired, put together. And we just kind of walked it out. And then this past September, on our 30th anniversary for the Crossing, we had all these different markers. We just handed everything, you know, handed things over. And so what happens for me is I'm on staff for at least a couple of years.
Yeah.
In a role that has not really been decided. I'm still part of the teaching team. So, you know, that's neat. Just a couple weekends ago, I had the opportunity to teach on one of my favorite topics, which is evangelism. So I got to teach on that. And then I'm teaching again. I told these guys, I said, and Andrew, you know, I'll take all the weekends I used to give away.
Yeah.
So, you know, I'll be glad. You guys got young families, so let me do the weekend after Christmas. Let me do Labor Day. Let me do Memorial Day. And then you guys can go and, you know, enjoy your family. Because for me, I want to serve. I want to serve this Andrew, and I want to serve the church. So we'll see what that all looks like over these next 2 years.
That's awesome. Yeah, and that's Dave and I are doing great together, like being on staff together still, you know, with all that. I think it's actually, I didn't know what it would be like. I thought it would be fine, but it really has been great. So I think it can work in the way that you're doing it. And especially since you guys have worked together then for a few years, it's not just some brand new person. And it's going to be fun to be able to see, you know, what God does through Andrew and the continued ministry, right?
Yeah, and he came on with the whole idea. One of the things was that attracted us to him was that he wanted a two-year runway, and he wanted somebody that was ahead and a little bit older to mentor, and then even have the opportunity to continue to mentor post the actual handoff.
Right.
And so we the two of us meet every week. Still, and that's kind of, we'll keep doing that over the next 2 years. It gives him an outlet to you know, ask questions, to vent if he wants to vent, or rant if he wants to rant, or celebrate if he wants to celebrate.
Yeah, I found that too, where I can talk to Dave about things that I can't talk to anyone else in the world about.
That's right.
Yeah.
And see, Dave Mitchell is, I mean, just a gem of a man of God.
Right.
And he's got all these years of experience.
Yeah.
He loves God's word.
Yep.
And he wants the church to succeed. And he wants Eric Wakeling and Matt Davis. You know, for me too, it's like, it's not, the crossing's not Tim Selleck.
Right.
It's a part of the larger story of the church that's mobilized to reach men and women and boys and girls for Jesus Christ and grow them up to become like him.
So
and
great.
So for somebody like me, I what can I do to see that continue?
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Wow.
And I know Dave feels, I think, you know, from what I know of Dave and riding motorcycles with Dave, he has the same heart.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Is there any, what's next for Tim Selleck, or is that still kind of up in the air? Because you seem like you got a lot more in the tank, brother.
Yeah, I do. I think Calvary Santa Ana is going to want to have me back at least once a year to teach on stage. Come on. Just got to do
that. The weekend after Christmas?
The weekend after Christmas. I have a couple ideas, but one of the things that I'm passionate about is I want to encourage church planters.
Mm-hmm.
I'd like for Sue and I to do that as a couple. Because when you plant, you know, everybody says, oh, you know, like the guy's the guy. But the reality is when you plant and you're starting out, you are both on staff. I mean, you don't both maybe get a salary, but you're all in.
Right, especially church planters.
That's right.
Yeah.
You're all in on that puppy, right?
Yeah.
And so there's a lot of loneliness of senior leaders.
Yeah.
But I've noticed of church planters.
Mm-hmm.
And so, what do they say, like 80-some% of, well, it's true of businesses too, startup businesses, startup churches, 80% of all startup business, startup churches within 5 years are no longer existing.
Yeah.
And yet, I think if some of these young men and women were just encouraged and had somebody cheering them on at appropriate, you know, intervals, they could make it past some of those sticky points that happen. So I'd like to do that. And then the other thing that we've talked about is because I've really seen that the succession, like one person told me, for about 10 years, it's going to be a big deal for the church
here
in the United States.
Yeah.
So in that 10 years, you know, I wouldn't mind, again, Sue and I, because when you do succession, at least the way I've seen it and seen it both in our context and then some others that I've interviewed, it's really not just the guy that was the senior pastor transitioning out, there's the husband and the wife. So somebody has to give some thought to that senior leader's spouse, especially the longer tenured or if you're founded.
Yeah.
So I'd like to, you know, and then it's also working with the person coming in, whether they're inside or from outside the walls of that particular church. It's like making sure that that transplant, if it is somebody from outside, is a good transplant. And then it's not just the like new leader, new communicator. It's also about like the whole staff and the church. So really it's helping a church go through change management. And I love that. I mean, that's something that is like something that I've read a lot of books on and thought a lot about. And so we'll see if that's what God has in store.
That's cool. That sounds good to me. Hey, one last question for you.
Sure.
Just as we close, just if, you know, think about for people considering taking a risk, stepping out in faith for the kingdom in some way, just any kind of final thoughts for those people willing to take that risk, but they're just thinking, praying about it right now.
Well, can I just,
yeah.
Yeah.
Or there, go off script. Do it.
No, no, it's not off script. It's not, it has nothing to do with it. But there's a story, and okay, we're, I'm not trying to spiritualize this, but there's a story.
We do spiritualize things here every once in a while.
Good. Okay. I'm glad to hear Calvary Santa Ana still teaches the Bible. Okay. So 1 Samuel 14. I love this story because where Jonathan, and he's got his armor bearer, and there's his dad who's under a pomegranate tree with 600 men. Who knows what they're doing? They should be leading the nation of Israel, and the Philistines have, you know, taken over. And Jonathan says, you know, come on, let's go to where the Philistines have their outpost. And he says that to his armor bearer. And then no one realized Jonathan left the camp. And then he says, let's go across the outpost of those pagans. Perhaps the Lord will help us, for nothing can hinder the Lord. He can win the battle, whether he has many warriors or only a few. Hmm. And so one of the things I think I would tell anybody is that if God can win battles, you don't need 500. You don't need 5,000. You don't need 500,000. You just need one person, a man or a woman, a young man or a woman, a little boy or girl, who just believes that God has the kind of supernatural power that can literally be unleashed in an individual life, and you. And then you go, and you just believe. You just believe that God's. And I'm not, that can sound really weird and hyper spiritual. But there's something about just knowing that, okay, he just says, perhaps the Lord will help us. You don't know if he's going to help you.
Yeah.
But like, you know, he can win a battle. He has many warriors, and only a few. And then I love this story because the armor bearer says, whatever you decide.
Yeah.
And so what I would say is to anybody is don't go by it yourself. So Jonathan didn't go by himself. He had an armor bearer. And so make sure you, and Jesus sent people out in twos. So I would say to any entrepreneur, I would say to anybody out there, pastor, planter, person who just wants to start, don't do it by yourself. Get one other person who believes as strongly in what, you know, you're called to do, and then you both go do it together. And then just watch what God will do.
Yeah, that's awesome. That's awesome.
Thanks for sharing your story. It's inspiring. I love just the sense of being connected to God, but not just listening and hearing, but then there's this command to go and to do it. And so 30 years later, and even further out from your Calvary Santa Ana years, we're just thankful for you and your connection to us and hope for more of you at least once a year around here.
Yeah, there you go.
In the future, right?
That's so right.
We got this on recording.
As long as it's
locked down.
As long as we're talking $100 honorarium.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah, no problem.
I'll tell you right now, this is on your little sister. You don't even have to pay me, okay? Because right. I just want to say this to Matt and you, Eric, but also someone I say to your congregation. I would not be the person I am today. And I've told Dave Mitchell that. I've told Bob Shank that. I've told, you know, so many different people around this place this. I would not be who I am today if it wasn't for the 5-year opportunity to be a part of this church. I mean, like being a part of Home Builders. I don't know if they call them, you call them Sunday school class anymore, adult Bible fellowships, whatever
yeah,
they are.
That one's still called Home Builders.
So, I mean, friendships that we made there. I wouldn't be who I am without some of those times that we had in prayer and Bible study and small group. I wouldn't be who I am without the leadership and some of the different ways that I got with some of the elders who were a part of. I just wouldn't be who I am. So I just want you guys to know that I am very grateful.
That's cool.
I mean, and I am exceedingly grateful for this church. Who would have known that Roger and Pat Harvey, for most people don't even know listening to this right now, that them taking us out to lunch would have catalyzed us coming back. And then 30 years later, there's a church called The Crossing.
Yeah.
All because of Calvary Santa Ana.
Wow.
So big stuff.
Good reminder for all of us, even just right now, like in people who are listening to this, that We have young Tim Selleck's who are coming right. here. They're showing up. Maybe not the rose sticker on their lapel, but that we need to be having those
yeah.
eyes.
Yeah, so. Invite somebody out to lunch. You never know what'll happen, right?
Mm-hmm. It's awesome.
It's awesome. See, thanks so much for being with us, Tim. Appreciate
You're welcome.
It.
Thank you.
Thanks again for joining us on the Calvary Life Podcast. If you enjoyed our show this week, don't forget to rate, review, and subscribe to us on Apple Podcasts or wherever you're listening. If you want to learn more about Calvary Church or share any of your thoughts, check us out on our website at calvarylife.org or find us on one of our social media accounts. We're on Instagram at calvary_church, Facebook at Calvary Church of Santa Ana, and Twitter at Calvary Life.